Hey there, welcome to another episode of Dead Frog Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Felix. This is a podcast dedicated to understanding, analyzing, and getting to know the ins and outs of what I believe to be an art form, stand-up comedy. Today is going to be a very special episode, as we found with my episode of Raymond the Bell, where we covered John Leguizamo's character work. Today we'll be going over clowning, as depicted in Natalie Palamides. I can't say her name, even though I think it's like kind of an Iberian name, and I should be able to say that. Her one-man show, Nate. And clowning is kind of foreign to me, you know. So I'm very happy to have the person who we're going to hear. We're both going to... I should probably restart this intro, but I'm not going to because I hate editing. I'm just gonna read some info real quick. Natalie Palamides is an actress, comedian, and writer out of Pittsburgh with a background in drag, improv, and clowning. She voiced Buttercup in the 2016 reboot of the Powerpuff Girls, and won the Best Newcomer at the Edinburgh Comedy Awards in 2017. You'll also find her currently playing Mara in commercials for Progressive Insurance. With me today to talk about Nate, a one-man show, is Natasha Mercado. Natasha Mercado, performing artist here in Los Angeles, worked with UCB for 5 years as a producer and director for branded content. She made the first monthly clown show at the UCB Franklin called Bring In My Clowns. She also virtually teaches with Stomping Grounds, a Dallas-based theater company, where she teaches clown and improv. Recently performed on Adult Swim's COVID's Last Open Mic. She also has an upcoming short film called Little Pink Fairy, debuting in March virtually and in person March 7th through the 14th. Please welcome to the show, Natasha Mercado.
Hello.
Sorry, it's like the three N-A-T's, you know? Nat, Nate, and Natasha. And
you know what? I get it. I understand.
And then my door's open, so gnats are, like, flying in.
Oh, no.
How are you? Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. I'm excited to talk about this.
I am, too. I normally do not support the Netflix Corporation, but I decided to do that for the sake of art and putting that Netflix subscription in my tax write-offs.
Yes. Great. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing that she was able to get her freaking one-man show onto some big corporate thing like that. I mean, and sharing clown with the masses, which I feel like is the most important part.
Yeah, that was largely due to Amy Poehler pulling some strings.
Yeah, well, I know that Natalie used to do, or she was on Mod Night at UCB. And so she had some affiliation with UCB before. And then, yeah, Paper Kite, which is Amy Poehler's production company, got involved. And, yeah, they produced it.
Oh, very cool. I didn't check before the show, or before we started recording, but I'm assuming that this was shot at some theater. And I really wish I knew.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I forget what theater they ended up shooting it at, but it's in L.A.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So, I don't think we've ever met in person.
No, we've only met or talked or done the same show over quarantine.
Wait, which show?
I don't know. Pachanga shows? I don't know.
Pachanga.
How do you know who I am? Wait a second.
Pachanga. Yeah. I remember when Fernando was like, hey, we're going to add more people to the Pachanga. I hope you say hello and are cordial to them.
That's a really good Fernando.
Thank you. And I do it only out of admiration, never out of mockery.
Yes, yes, yes.
He has deep, resonant, amazing stage voice.
Yes.
So yeah, and then I was like, oh, who's this person? Oh, Natasha. Oh, this is pretty cool. All right. Clowning. All right, that's interesting. That's... I feel that there are very few people in the Pachanga who do clowning.
Yeah, which is interesting. I mean, I met Fernando at the Catsby workshops, which is like the clown workshop at the clubhouse every other week. and he's so great and he's so nice. And then after one of the workshops, he came up to me and was like, hey, like, I'm doing the sketch show at Second City. I'm like, I'll give you a comp and you should come support. It's with Pechanga. I'm like, oh, that's great. And then that was the first time that I really saw Pechanga perform and like do stuff. And it was very funny and it was really fun. And it seemed like such a nice audience too. And every show that I've done with Pechanga, I'm always like, this is just like a nice group of people. What the heck?
Oh, dude, we've never done the same show.
I guess not.
That's embarrassing, right? It's like, because I write for the Pechanga. I've written for the Pechanga. I've been in the sketches, you know, and it's like, you've been in the sketches and you've performed. And it's like, I think from like your POV, it looks like I've never been part of the Pechanga, you know, if we haven't crossed paths.
No, I know that I have. Okay. I don't think I've done any of this. I've only done my own weirdo clown improvised bits on the Pechanga shows. And I don't know. It's crazy because Pechanga seems small and then it seems big at the same time. Because I feel like every time I perform, there's like new people that reach out to me afterwards. They're like, hey, good job. Like, hey, thank you.
Never mind. I was going to talk about like receiving things, like great jobs after a show. And like, I recently did a what I believe to be a COVID compliant outdoor show on Sunday night. And afterwards, I got all these like, hey man, that was really good. That sort of stuff, right? Constantly. I mean, maybe like too much, you know? Oh, you don't know me that well. I'm being sarcastic.
Were they? Was it a stand up show?
Oh yeah, it was a stand up show.
I feel like it's not a given that people come up to you after a show and are like, good job, you know? I mean, sometimes there's like the, oh yeah, hey man, great job, great set. What's your name? But I don't know. There's a different warmth about Pechanga that I really admire. And
yeah.
Of course, if you bomb, no one wants to make eye contact with you or say anything to you. So,
well, not to like get too far away from the subject, but this has just been on my mind. Like, even after shows, like I did get a lot of people going, like, "Hey, man, that was really great. I love that one joke or whatever." Mm-hmm. And it's like, what does that mean? Right? Does that mean anything anymore?
Why wouldn't it? Yeah. They liked what you did. They felt compelled enough to say, "Hey, I like that."
Well, okay, how about this? You have routines that you do. Like, I'm sure you've done some acts more than once. And at some point, you're like, oh, yeah, that's how that goes. That's the act. It's good. I know it's good now. So there's, like, some people, when other people are like, oh, that was good, you know, you're like, yeah, I know.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay. So, it, like, almost in a backhanded way. Like, of course it's good. That's why I performed it for you. And if it wasn't good, I wasn't going to do it.
Yeah.
I think there's also just like a bunch of shit that people perform, but we can't hold that against them. I mean, I do shit sometimes and you do shit, I'm sure. And I don't know. I think sometimes people are surprised when they see something really funny at the same time, even though we're doing comedy so much and we like know it's supposed to be funny. It's not a given that it's actually going to be funny.
I agree with you. And I'm sure like sometime during my next performance, I'm really just going to eat crap. And then it's going to come right back into my face. But I have a question for you.
Okay.
How long have you been doing any form of comedy or performing?
I've been performing, since forever, since before I could even talk, you know, doing puppet shows and stuff for my family.
Oh, okay.
Does that count?
Yeah, of course it does. Yeah, I think that's amazing because, I don't know, I think there's something about performance that's inherently a form of teaching or reproducing what you've learned so far and what you think is worth mentioning about life and your experience. And if you're doing that with puppetry, like at that before you can even talk, that means that you're doing something. Aww. You know, you're like educate, not educated, but you're showing like I'm part of society.
Yeah, or some sort of comprehension. Like, yeah. Interesting. I love that. That's beautiful.
Oh, yeah. I'm very, I would say I have some profundity, but I'm also a big jerk.
Okay.
We don't know each other. That's why I'm speaking so, like, glibly and also, like, generalizing myself. Can you tell me more, like how that progressed, your performing?
Yeah, I mean, my puppets used to be Beanie Babies, and I had a ton of Beanie Babies. So all different types of characters. And there used to be, like, this half wall in our first house by, like, the door. Do you know what I mean by, like, a half wall?
Yeah.
Like, kind of like a little divider that just divides, like, the front door area where you take off your shoes in the living room.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's, yeah, you like you open the door. I see it on my left hand side for some reason.
Yes, exactly. And
yeah. It's like instead of having a couch, you have
a wall there. Yeah. So that would be like my stage. And I'll go hide behind that, and then my parents would sit in the living room and watch me do puppet shows for them.
Oh, and then where did that go? Like after that?
Then after that, my mom signed me up for like theater classes, and so I did that for a while, and then I did like every single sport. Like I was an equestrian for a little bit. I did tennis. I did swimming. I did like everything other than drama or theater. I just tried it and I quit all of it. And then I think I finally made my way back to theater and stuff in the sixth or seventh grade. And
oh, so all of that was before seventh grade.
Yeah. It was like doing all this, and then is this like too in depth? I don't know. I've just been doing this for a long time.
No, I want as much information as possible. Yeah, that I just thought that was funny. If you're like, yeah, then I spoke at the UN, and then I, you know, I became a nationally ranked swimmer, and then I turned six.
No, I tried all of it, and it didn't work. I remember, like, faking breaking my ankle in soccer. And my dad must have known that I didn't actually break my ankle. But I was like, Dad, it really hurts. I can't do this anymore.
Where'd you go?
In Maryland.
Oh, this is all Maryland. Okay, yeah. Nice. I only know Baltimore.
I lived in Germantown, Maryland, which is in between, like, D.C. and Baltimore.
Oh, that's... That seems like a hotspot.
Hotspot for what? Just life?
Just like people who, I'm sorry, but like I like from what I know, it can those DC and Baltimore can be very difficult places to be.
Yeah, growing up, like all of our parents would always say, "You're so lucky to live in such a diverse area," and. We had no idea what that meant. I mean, I had no idea. I was like, yeah, sure. Okay. The parents keep saying that over and over again, but it doesn't, what does that even mean? I think I only realized that in college when I was in classes with people and basically everyone would be white and they like didn't know how to talk to Black people or talk to Latinos. And it was painful. It was like a painful awakening kind of.
Yeah. And at some point, like, it loses any sort of novelty. You like, kind of have to stop being like, huh, funny white person. They're just so idiosyncratic and, like, they're fumbling around, huh? And then at some point, you're like, this is, like, demented.
It just felt always so juvenile. It was like, what? Where are you? Where did you live? How have you gotten this far? And, like, you don't know how to just talk to people. This is crazy.
Yeah. Well, what I was alluding to about like the hotspot thing is like I know a few people who are from that area. Not personally. I think Kiki of the Pachanga is from Baltimore. And I, you know, sorry to mention these guys, but you know, the hosts of Cumtown, Nick Mullen and Stavros Halkias.
I don't know these people.
Oh, well.
But I'm not good with names, so I don't know.
I'm sorry. There are just these cities that create people who are like, yeah, okay, I've been part of the city. I now need to move my talents somewhere else.
Ah.
There's like a heavy fermentation that occurs in certain areas. Oh,
that's a really good way of putting it. Hmm.
So under this very weird pseudoscience that I'm doing, I'm lumping you in.
Okay, cool. I love this. I appreciate this. I mean, yeah, I grew up thinking like, I want to get out of here. I'm not going to stay here. There's no way in hell that I will stay in Germantown, Maryland. And then I moved to New York and I was like, fuck, this is so hard. This is so fucking hard. But it was like everything that I ever wanted to do. And then by the time I was done living in New York, I was like, I guess I'll live in LA. I think that's what I want. Even though I thought that I would just like move to New York and then die in New York and be there forever. But
how long I was there
for 6 years.
How long have you been in Los Angeles?
I've been here now 3 years, 4 years.
How do you like it?
I love it.
It's good, right?
I'm so happy. I'm so happy that I'm here. I can't stress it enough. It was just the perfect decision.
All right. So this is kind of like a tangent, but LA, you see other people complain about Los Angeles. You see how it can be like super annoying, right? Can you agree with me that like oftentimes people who are complaining about Los Angeles are transplants who are they themselves making it worse? I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the people complaining.
Okay, wait. I need some more clarification before I sign off on this.
I just need you to agree with me right now. And this is full pressure. Agree with me or we're ending the interview.
Okay, so people that are complaining about it are usually transplants. And they're usually the ones that are making it shittier. I feel like there's a kernel of truth in there. Can I have some more elaboration?
Okay. Sure. Yeah, okay, let's say traffic. Traffic, for instance, yeah? People complain about the traffic, but those are the same people who are clogging up the 405 or the 5 or the 101. Because they want to move to those areas that like branch that where you can exit off those freeways.
Yeah, I mean,
so they're contributing to the same thing that they're complaining about.
There's a level of acceptance with it, and I think I went through that, you know, when I moved to New York for college. And I was like, living in a city's hard. What do you mean? Like, yeah, we're not in fucking Wyoming, so there's going to be traffic. You just like accept that. That's what you signed up for.
Yeah. And it's like, that's the perfect time to meditate. Like in a very like low state meditation is like you're sitting in your car and just take the time to be with your own thoughts. Like what? Instead, you're just getting angrier and angrier. And then, you know, there are people who like will take the trains and public transportation and they're like, this isn't an efficient system or whatever they're saying. But I know oftentimes they just really dislike being around like lower class people, homeless people.
That is so depressing. People that complain about public transportation, that's all New York is. And that was one of the things that I was really sad about that I didn't really have in LA, or I didn't really use it as much. I didn't really use it here in LA. I haven't really used the train. I mean, I did when I first moved here and then I started using my car and stuff.
I like it. I really like the times where I use public transportation to get around to get to the shows.
Public transportation is a fucking blessing. Like, I just wish there was more of it. That's all. Like in New York.
Oh, you don't know this about me? And I don't think the listeners do either, so I'll just take this opportunity. That was another reason why I advocate so much for public transit is that my dad has been a civil servant for over 35 years. He's been a metro operator. Yeah.
Dang. I mean, that's what keeps this freaking city going. Public transportation. There's so many people that use it every day.
Yeah. I'm really sorry that I went to this really funny topic for so long. I feel like this is an odd question. Because I get asked this question of, like, when did you decide to do comedy or when did you know that you were good? And it's like, oh, it was never a question of when I wanted to decide to do it. I just kept doing it. I was like, I was compelled to keep performing or doing this joke or whatever. But can you answer that question? Like, what was the thing, like, where you reflected upon and you're like, oh, this is, like, a thing that I want to this is an act that I want to get better at, or that was a funny joke, or that was a character that I need to develop, or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, it's just like, I love making people laugh. That has always been, that's been a constant thread throughout my life. There's nothing like it, like making your family laugh. Oh my gosh, that's the best feeling in the whole world. So I think when I was younger, I thought, okay, actor, that if I'm taking drama classes, that means I'm going to be an actor. And then when I was doing like the plays and stuff, and I would make people laugh during my serious scenes, I was like, okay, there's something about me that's like funny, even when I'm being like more serious. And I like that. I wouldn't trade that for anything. I'm not saying, like, I think that's a good thing that I can do. And then, yeah, I started working for and taking classes at UCB. And yeah, then I just kept following that. And then I think when I moved to LA and I finally found out what clown was, because I didn't know clown was even an option, I think that was a really big defining moment for me and my comedic sense, my comedic sensibility. I mean, like, oh yeah, I'm a clown. I've always been a clown. It's just a amazing mix of all the things that I love.
Whoa. Okay. That's. I don't know why, but I attributed so many years to you clowning, and not that I'm like taking it back, but it's like, oh, that's how I learned about you, right? It's like clowning. So I have a question. How do you feel about where clowning is situated in one comedy and in the arts?
I think it's very niche. Not a lot of people know about it. They associate clowning with like red nose and white face paint and big shoes and all that. And that is an aspect of it. But I think at least the clown scene in LA is very exciting to me because it's a form of performing that's more energetically connected with the audience. And I was interviewed at the Clubhouse a year or two ago. I don't even know where this interview ended up or who the person even was, but they were like, what's it feel like to be a part of the next improv? And that felt so weird to be asked because I don't know. I think all of these things have the possibility to get very, very popular, but clown is very much about being connected. And I think a lot of people are scared to be connected in that way, especially with people they don't know. And I would like to see it be more popular, but I also have my doubts that it would get that popular with performers. And I will say that there's more clown in everything already than we give credit for. Like the best improvisers, the best sketch actors, the best stand-ups, there's all aspects of clown in what they're already doing.
I don't know much about clown, but I would agree with that. That's sort of a thing that I've realized when I will eventually find out, yes. Oh, these people have a background.
Like Sacha Baron Cohen. Classic clown. Yeah. Oh, Steve-O as well is a clown. Yeah.
Oh, really?
He like went to clown college with the Barnum Circus peeps, I think. I hope.
Oh, that's tight. And then Bobby Hill, famously a clown. I like people that I really admire in the scene working right now, like John Ryan, and Taylor Mendoza. They're both really great. Do that. And I don't know, like, there's something about clowning that. I want to touch on like you being asked, how do you feel about being part of the next improv? And not to be a pretentious gatekeeper kind of person, but I can see why, like, you know, stand-up has been inundated with performers, and I can see why improv has also been churning out like superfluous improvisers. And that's because there's like a very accessible formulaic approach to learning both of those things, and then having the open mics that, what mm-hmm. are you called, improv jams, that would allow for you to do that sort of thing. And I feel like with clowning, I don't believe that there will be many, like, I don't think it'll turn into improv, because clowning feels like something where you need much more of a better lens. From how I see it, it looks like you actually need to be creative. Whereas if you want to be a stand-up or improviser, you definitely can.
Really?
Don't have to.
What
be creative
do you mean by creative?
Like, for instance, and this is what I see from stand-up. You can literally say things that you've heard or seen on the internet. You can, one of the largest points, like, of comedic tension or like creating a joke is shared reference. You can literally point out what it's. Yeah, I was at Starbucks the other day, and then they said my name is on my cup. They were like, "Oh, your name's Kelsey?" No, I said my name's Gabriel. Right? And people be like, "Ha, that's silly." But I understand that reference. And then you can just continue to repeat the mm-hmm. same sort of subject matter that's been said by other people. And then there are very few. I think there are very few original ideas that are being said right now. I think most people are trying to sell their personalities rather than write jokes.
But I would also say that the best stand-ups and the best improvisers are very creative. I don't know. And I feel like...
Oh, I'm saying that, like, when it comes to more people doing
clowning,
you mean
shoveling in, like,
have as much as,
like, a clowning manual and, like, clowning 101 and clowning 201 and, like, it's something that actors are going to need on their resume if they're going to be going out for commercials. Like, is that what you mean by the next improv?
Well, I mean, like, just you'll have an incredibly large amount of people doing that art. I don't think it'll...
I feel like it's a distinction between lack of creativity, because I think there are way more people that are creative than not. It's just that there's blocked artists because of stuff that they've gone through in their life that made them think that they couldn't use their creativity in that way. And I think clown just requires a level of introspection and curiosity. And it's very hard. It's very, very hard work. And not saying that I'm like a master clown in any way, but it really did change my life. And I feel like it opens up things for me all the time. And it's a very vulnerable way to perform, but I feel like when it does go well, or when it is a good, or even when it's a bad set, it's still like such a learning experience about my own humanity and like the audience's humanity as well.
So I agree with you. I think that's the point that I'm trying to motivate, which is like, I don't think the same people who will confidently go and do stand up and just spew out the same crap that's been said several times, I don't think those same people are going to clown because of what a difficult experience it is to be introspective and want to generate something more vulnerable and different than going on stage and talking at people.
The letting people in and minutes. Letting people actually see you and how you feel is the scariest part. And like a big clown, like 101 thing is like you're letting the audience see you as you see them. And it's kind of like this mirror back and forth. And that's what influences your performance moving forward. So you're creating something with them.
I like that. I know that, I'm sorry, I feel like I'm really talking your ear off on this earlier section. We haven't even gotten to the clip. But if I can ask you one last question before we get to it. Do you want there to be
more
clowns?
That's been such a big part of my quarantine experience teaching. And so it's been very fulfilling to share clown with people. And I don't think it's something where it's like, only the, if you only study with the French masters, then you're a clown. Like, no, there's clown in everything every day. And the more people that can know about it, the better, because I feel like it will make people, or it just helps people be more empathetic and compassionate to others and to themselves.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you. I do want to clarify that I was not trying to be a gatekeeper. I just wanted to challenge.
Yeah, I don't think you're a gatekeeper at all. I don't think you're acting like a gatekeeper in any way.
Perfect. All right. Thank you. Thank you for agreeing with me. And I just need one more additional compliment to get me out of this hole. Just kidding. Hey, so we're going to take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Also, to hear the clip that we're going to be talking about, which Natasha and I have recreated. We are not ripping the audio from a Netflix performance, because I think that would get us in trouble. In fact, so instead, we've recreated all of the audio through engineering and sound. Okay.
Feels like. I don't know if I'll ever find love again. Although, I have started noticing my art teacher, Miss Jackson. I'm taking this adult night painting class over at the local middle school. You know the one. So I guess I could use some relationship advice. Anybody here in a relationship? Who's here with their partner right now? Who's here with their partner right now? Keep them up. Let's see. You pointing at those guys? You two? Are you together? Right on. How's it going? I'm all right. A little heartbroken, but all right. First off, what's up, man? I'm Nate. What was that?
Noah.
Pleasure. LaCroix? There you go. So, how long have you two been together? 7 months? Wow. What's it take to keep the spark alive?
Laughter and
nasty. Wow. All right, I'll keep that in mind. Oh, I'm so sorry, actually, I never got your name.
You didn't ask me before, but it's Helen.
Yeah, I'm so sorry I didn't ask you. Helen?
It's Helen,
H-E-L-E-N.
Helen? Yeah, you got it.
Oh, probably couldn't understand because it's actually pronounced Helene. It's Gaelic. But whatever, it's your name, say it how you want. Even though you're saying it wrong. I know because my ex's name was Helene. It's crazy. Such a rare name. Where are you from?
Mount Vernon.
Mount Vernon, New York?
Yes.
Born and raised?
Yes.
Shut up. Wow. That's nuts. My ex, Helene. She was born and raised in Mount Vernon, New York. So crazy. Wow. What's your job?
I'm currently in between jobs.
It's okay. What did you do before?
I worked in a gallery.
You worked in a gallery?
Yeah.
Doing what?
I was the assistant.
The assistant to?
To the gallery.
To the gallery? And what was the gallery called?
It was called Gabali.
Gabali? Shut up. So nuts. My ex, Helene, she's currently unemployed, but used to be an assistant at a gallery named Gabali. Wow. That's so crazy. Okay. This is kind of crazy, but I don't know why I'm asking this. Just humor me for a sec, okay? Uber or Lyft?
I use Lyft.
Lyft?
Yeah.
Shut up. My ex, Helene, she's obsessed with Lyft. Tattoo. Can you go like this for me? What was that?
No.
Helene?
Oh my God. Oh no.
Damn, that was funny. We both just heard that.
What's up?
Hey, Natasha. Why Natalie? And why
Natalie is so funny? She's so funny, and she is in this clown community in LA. And yeah, I've seen it in person at the Lyric, and I know she's been working on it for years, and it's kind of just one of those things that I feel like is such a point of pride for the clown community, and I feel so happy to share it with other people to be like, hey, this is what I'm doing in LA, something kind of like this. So, of course, I would choose Nate to talk about.
I love that, yeah. Yeah, I feel like in a city where you, it seems like everyone's your competition, it's good to realize that, you know, what was it, a rising tide
raises all ships. Yeah, of course. That's so much more exciting than being in competition with people. What? No. What the heck?
Okay, so we heard the beginning of this, what are moments before this clip started? They've just rallied and made a large point of, like, asking.
Right? That's it's 11 minutes into the show. So it's, like, pretty much at the beginning because it's, like, an hour-long thing. And she comes in as Nate on, like, a little motorcycle. And then she gets everyone to cheer, just us, just us. And now she's, like, drinking – or Nate, he is drinking some LaCroix. And he's talking about, like, he needs some love advice because he has a crush on his art teacher. And then the clip starts.
Yeah. Repeating, like, you have to ask. And this is really brilliant when he picks up. I'm gonna use he, she interchangeably because of the work, the way that, like, drag works and the way that we're talking about a person portraying person and then talking about the person. But they get an axe.
Oh my gosh. And then that comes out at the end too. I'm so glad you brought that up because okay, so Nate starts using an axe to chop a piece of wood. And immediately when I saw that, it reminded me of this quote, like, the tree remembers what the axe forgets, which is a Maya Angelou quote, right? And did you think of that too?
I haven't watched all of it.
Well, Nate brings it up at just as a one-liner that's kind of, like, thrown away. That's like, and then... then I did some axe stuff. What was that about? And, like, they keep talking. But, what were you going to say about the axe part?
Oh, I was just going to, you know, it's commonly known, like, in African-American communities, so the difficulty of saying the word ask. So they'll say axe. And so I thought they were alluding to that. But now I know it's a setup for a greater thing.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I don't even know if that's what, like, they were thinking of, but it made me think of that quote.
Oh, wait, real quick. Is the term deconstruction? Like, at the end, do they talk about their set?
No. Oh, okay. Well, right, as Nate, the character goes, like, I forget specifically what it is, but, like, Nate is going on a rant being like, and then you came to my one-man show, like, to their art teacher. You came to my one-man show, and there was a part where it's like, why was he hitting the wood with an axe? That was weird, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah. I guess there's kind of this breakdown moment, but...
Oh, immediate self-reference? Yeah. Okay. But let's go back to what the listeners heard, if you don't mind. So it's like, yeah, my ex just broke up with me, right? I asked her everything. And here are some easy jokes, right? I asked her before I kissed her. I asked her before I ate her pussy, which is the first time I've said pussy on this program. I'm going to put a little bell for her time I say that word. I miss tuna casserole, which is like, it's like, let's not forget that we're in character here. We're this masculine figure. And it's, I've even asked her to take my Gam Gam's ring, which is supposed to be heartfelt, but it's like, it's so close to just seeing all of this, toxic masculinity that I felt like there's no illicit feeling of like sympathy for this
person. And the reason why this person can get away with it is because of who is portraying them, and it's Natalie, who is this, like, 5 foot, I think, 2 woman who, like, has drawn chest hair, or has chest hair, like, glued onto her chest. she doesn't have a shirt on and stuff, and it's like very vulnerable, and so the audience is willing to go there with this person because they know it's just such a freaking farce of what this person is in real life.
Yeah, there's one thing that Americans do well, and that's irony. It's being able to understand like what's mm-hmm. being implicitly said. I do, yeah. So, and that's why like some of these jokes have like the double meaning, where it's like you can either take them to be funny as like, haha, this is a thing that this guy has said, and mm-hmm. it's like degrades women, or you can be laughing at the idea that men think this is funny. Like, it's so absurd that someone would still have these sort of beliefs that you would liken a woman's vagina to a tuna casserole.
Yeah, it's so aggressive. Yeah. It's so, like, mm-hmm. utterly foul. And, unfortunately, it's, like, very close to life as well, though.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate.
That is not so far-fetched. It's like, yeah, this is some shit that I probably could hear at some stand-up set, you know?
Yeah, it's embarrassing as a society that we still have to deal with these issues. I get it lends itself to great performance and content, but it's like, come on, we're still, you know, have you seen that movie, Coming Home for Christmas or something like that with Kristen Stewart and Mackenzie Davis? The premise is that they're lesbians coming home for Christmas, and it's like, have we not gone past this as a society? It's so embarrassing that we're on the same time period in time where we still have to deal with these issues.
Yeah, it's incredible. To like think of how many thoughts, how many philosophies, how many very introspective people we've had for thousands and thousands of years. And yet, like, I don't know, something like lesbians coming home for Christmas is still groundbreaking and it's still important. It's just this weird paradox of like, how are we going to keep moving on with this stuff?
Yeah, it's like at any point in time, our thoughts are anachronistic. So they're like, yeah. Oh, I love this move of the LaCroix being poured down the cheeks. We see them pouring down on either side of their cheeks. And what did it say? Wow. So that's what LaCroix feels like.
I think it's all just setups for this great audience interaction that I feel like is the clowniest part. To this bit, you know, where she has everyone in the palm of her hand. Like, maybe they aren't on Nate's team, maybe they don't like him, maybe they do like him and they think he's very charming, but the fact that they're really interested and invested is what pushes them over the edge to actually start interacting with Nate, which is a huge clown thing, you know, this dangerous moment where you're interacting with the performer. Like, you're part of the thing that's happening.
Yeah, and what's the expectation with the audience? That they can both disagree to do something, and also the expectation is that they'll be in safe hands even if they agree to do the unknown?
I think that's what makes Natalie's performance so great, because the audience members are truly allowed to just be themselves and respond in whatever way they want. And all the thought, all the years of working on Nate Show, like, Natalie knows how to freaking work a crowd and respond to anything that comes up. Like the tattoos that end up coming up, you know, what do you like, Uber or Lyft? And the person like Lyft shows the freaking tattooed arm. Amazing. And then later on in the special, should I do spoilers or no? Oh, no.
I wouldn't be able to talk to you about them, but please mention them.
Later on in the special, like, Nate takes down his pants a little bit, and you see that taxi is written on his butt. And you're like, this is brilliant. This performer was literally ready for any response. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, that's
amazing.
Beautiful.
And it's just like, it's such a simple 7-minute clip, but it's a great showcase of what it means to just be with the audience and really allow them to be themselves and receive them and see how amazing it is to be in a show where like the performer is on their freaking A game and ready for it because they put in the reps, they put in the work.
If I can ask you about clowning. So we've mentioned like the vulnerability that's established in the beginning and how like collectively they start to ask each other before the clip that we heard, like Natalie and Nate is like, it's about asking, right? So they've established consent. So we have these elements of being vulnerable and like being communicative, mm-hmm. like being able to express yourself. So when you are learning to clown, how are those elements talked about?
Clown is such a paradox, man. Have I already said that? Clown is like, as soon as you start identifying something as clown, it becomes less clown by the second. I feel like we've said clown 1,000,000 times, but how's it established?
You should know the premise. The reason this, do you know that the reason the show is called Dead Frog is after the old adage, like once you dissect a frog, you know, it's dead. Much like the joke.
I didn't know that. I've never heard that before. That's brilliant.
Yeah. And that's where we do that. This is where we go and we
really are fucking killing it. Yeah. Okay. So, oh God. Okay. When you start doing clown, you're kind of just thrown up on stage and you're asked to be yourself. And you see everyone's interpretation of that. And so they show their mask, and their mask is their social defense of what they think people want from them. So for example, like when I started doing clown, I had this big smile on my face, even when I was really, really uncomfortable. And one of my teachers really lovingly and directly said to me, like, you don't need to take care of us right now. And we can all see that you're really uncomfortable. So you don't have to smile. And I think it starts more from this place of like allowing yourself to just be on stage. And once you are more in tune with that, you can start asking the audience, or the audience trusts you enough that you are in tune with the moment, you are in tune with what people are feeling, you're in tune with what you're feeling, that they start to allow you to bring them into your performance.
Yeah, before we started recording, I did notice that you put up a story.
Oh my god!
Where somebody recorded, like, what it's like to be, what it's like to be a male performer.
Brilliant. Okay, I'm so glad you watched that. Shout out to Caitlin Linden. Seriously, this is one of my favorite videos, and she sent it to me a couple days ago, being like, "Is this too mean?" No, it's a perfect video. It's like, yeah, there's no formulaic, oh, now I'm going to stare into the audience and build rapport. Like, people, when they're unsafe like that, some manic person on stage just staring at you isn't going to build any rapport and make you feel any more comfortable to be involved with what's going on. And I think it also goes back to the point of what you're saying. There's no formula to make this work. You just have to be so sensitive to what's happening in the room. And the same set isn't going to hit the same way every night. I've seen Natalie's show too, Nate. I've seen it multiple times, and different things hit differently depending on who was there.
Yeah, you can't see this in the clip, but I do hope everyone who has a Netflix account or access to one gets to watch this, but we'll see moments where Nate will use their eyes. And like you were saying right now, that it doesn't always hit the same way. They do the eye sort of gesture one time that gets a big laugh because it's like self-reflective, but then they do the big eye gesture again and it doesn't get the same result.
Yeah, and that's a very clown thing to just like, oh, you like this thing? I'll give it to you again. And the first time it might hit really hard, and the mm-hmm. second time it doesn't. And then the clown starts to figure out, okay, how do I make that hit again? How do I implement this at the right moment, the right time, that they love it again?
Yeah, and it was premature on this one, unfortunately. Okay, so then just real quick so we can get through this sorry if it seems like too, you know, pulling back here. But so that's what Krang feels like, because we're setting up this narrative of what this mm-hmm. character is doing, what their arc is. And then, so they need, love advice. So mm-hmm. then they look out, and here's a question for you. They look, Nate looks for a couple. And then there's a moment where they say, oh, are you guys a couple? Right? So, oh, it's a guy-guy couple. Right? But I would imagine that they end up selecting a hetero couple intentionally, like to be able to do the following.
Huh. That's really interesting. I didn't think about that.
Right, because they have to be patronizing to the chick of the hetero couple.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
So, or do you think it would work just as well if you had like a homosexual couple, but they're both like women identifying?
I think it's such a universal bit, though. I think it adds when it's like a woman and a man, and he like goes and shakes the hand of the dude and whatever. But I think the bit could work with any couple. You really don't think?
Really? Well, here's the pushback. It feels like one person has to be like mask, quote unquote, in that traditional sense, presenting, and the other person has to be femme presenting. I'm not saying that this is a good thing. I'm just saying it feels like in order for the bit to work, one of the people has to be seen as, you know, the traditional femme position to be condescended to. The other person is the person who gets the handshake.
Anyone could get dressed down by Nate in that scenario. Because he's so really? Toxic. He's already like all the masculine in the room. He's the alpha. I'm very confident that I think it could work with any couple.
Okay, then. Here on the show, I'm going to say this right now. It's on the record. Next time Natalie's performing Nate, I'm going to buy the tickets for as many gay couples as I can. So that we stockpile the audience with gay couples, and we're going to see if it works.
Oh my god!
And you can hold me to that.
Oh, great!
Okay. So then they only asked for the name of the dude and the couple, and they asked the I'm just gonna say dude and chick, the chick, like, how do you make 7 months, right? They laugh at like 7 months. And then Natalie observes that and then like does the eyes. It's like, how do you make it work? Well, like laughter and like an honesty. And then they condescendingly go,
Nate has them in the palm of their hand because the audience is freaking laughing at everything. It's like Nate is just acting as a mirror to whatever they're saying. And the fact that it's just being repeated through this insanely toxic masculine archetype on stage is what makes it funny.
Yes. Okay. Is there like a term, like some kind of jargon I can throw at our listeners right now to describe what you're saying?
Oh gosh. I don't freaking know.
Is it just mirroring?
Yeah, I think reflection? It's a Buffon technique. And I think you'd actually be really interested in it, where it's like the Buffon is making the audience laugh, but the audience doesn't realize that they're just laughing at themselves.
Damn. Okay, there we go.
Buffon?
And Buffon is a man, right?
What do you mean?
Yeah. I was just gonna ironically say, see, Jesus. So men have the best observations and ideas. I'm just kidding. I was gonna, because we went to a very highfalutin like position, right, where we talk about like some historical sort of technique, and then I just wanted to bring up, you know, I wanted a lowbrow,
yes,
real quick, of course, an easy joke. Thanks for understanding. You know, I love it. I love when people. all right. So, what are the things? Okay. So, what's your name? Helen? Like, then purposefully, like, I think Natalie understood the name, but Helene? Then Nate said something that was similar.
Oh, it's your name.
Yeah.
Like, you can say it however you want. I think this could apply to anyone. It's just Nate is personifying that toxic ass archetype, and we're all so fucking tired of it that, yeah, of course we want to punch the shit out of it. Whatever this person said, it's like exercising this toxicity out of our systems. And I think that's why the audience just loves to laugh at everything that Nate says.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, it's like the, you know, people say it's like the final hurrah for like these old patriarchal structures. And then we get to exercise them out. Perfect. And then, Helene. Then what was after that? Where she grew up, Mount Vernon, New York. Well, that's crazy because, like, well, first, actually, they do the setup into the bit by saying, crazy, such a rare name. Obviously, Helen or Helene is not a rare name. Then it's like, so, but that's how the audience kind of gets, like, prepped for the following bit. It's like, oh, Mount Vernon, New York? No way. My ex-girlfriend
and I will also say that
born and raised in Mount Vernon.
Clowning is also about being stupid. The audience is not tricked by Nate. Like, they don't actually think that Nate had a girlfriend named Helene who lived in Mount Vernon. But we are involved and interested because of Nate's sense of play. And we're like, okay, Nate is having fun. I'm having fun too. I'll follow this as far as it goes. And Nate just keeps delivering exactly what the audience wants. They just want to see this poor woman's like life details mirrored back through this toxic masculine archetype, because it's so relatable. It's so playful.
Yeah. And I also think this is what, one feature of like masculinity that Nate or Natalie is like portraying here is the sort of like understanding that your audience views you as like a, like guys will understand that people think that they're dumb or like overly macho. So they'll try to gain sympathy by trying to be relatable.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And the way that like men will project their crushes onto like any sort of figure, like when you mention mentions the art teacher, right? It's like, oh, you can relate, right, guys? Remember when we used to have crushes on our middle school teachers? Which is like a non-gender specific thing, but it's a way in which guys can show their vulnerability. It's through saying
that
they
really
have had a romantic interest at some point.
I remember rewatching this clip and like hearing that moment again, and it didn't hit with me in that same way. Like, I didn't get the joke of like, oh yeah, all dudes have crushes on their art teacher or something. Because I know Natalie says, you know the one, like you know the middle school. I'm like, I don't know. That didn't really resonate with me. So I love that observation. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. So on the first time around, you're like, did you interpret it as like, obviously?
I interpreted it as like more of just like a shitty suburban type of middle school. Like it's not high brow.
Oh, you did. You pictured
like
one.
This is where people, you know, are taking night classes. This is where people like end up living in the same town their whole lives or something. And not speaking down on it, but that's just like more of the lifestyle. So I just imagine more of a lifestyle instead of like a boyhood type of memory.
Oh, dang. You know what? I hate this about like performing, right? Because this conversation that we're having about it, the fact that we have so many interpretations, an artist, if they want to be a jerk, can be like, I'm not saying that about Natalie. I'm just saying that about other, like, you know, like, I remember one time there was this thing at the Mocha in Little Tokyo. And the artist was there to answer questions. And then during the Q&A, some people were like, well, you know, when I look at your painting, it depicts this historical event tied with these sort of concepts of modernity. And then he goes, yeah, that's mm-hmm. what I was going for. And then somebody else gives a completely different thing. And they're like, that's what I was going for also. And that's just one thing that I've always been wary about in the arts.
I appreciate artists and comedians that have a point of view. And I appreciate art that can be interpreted in multiple ways, but it like involves a special type of person to acknowledge like, oh yeah, I didn't think of that, but that's a cool thing that you got from that. I'm glad you got that, you know?
Well, no, I think you're alluding to me. So
yes,
I think
there's a sense of transparency that we just need. Like, not everyone knows everything. I didn't get my fucking master's in philosophy, so I'm not going to know all this shit. But I can appreciate when people observe it in my own work. Or, like, I think creativity also through artists, like, we open ourselves up to channeling these ideas. And sometimes they're bubbling up from our subconscious. And so it's hard for us to put words on it.
Okay. I see you. You're really defending the layperson here. Yeah. You are. I love it. That's because I mean, yes, right. That's exactly why. Like, there's such a big difference between people who, you know, like Latino immigrants are seen by like native like Anglo mm-hmm. English speakers as dumb, because obviously we can communicate great and yes, we just don't have the comprehension for the English language that other people might have. So
track? Yeah. In a similar way, where we see like as creativity as this great humbling force that sometimes we don't know why we're doing the things we're doing, but we still try to communicate them because it matters.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You're good. I think you are very good at you're good at conversation. You're good at being like, well, Joe, you're saying this thing, you know, but you know, consider this. And just for the record, I did not get my MA.
You didn't?
I did not complete the program.
But you said you did.
I dropped out. Yeah, the last semester. No. I said I did an MA. I did the graduate work. Let me clarify. I dropped out due to a personal, like a life event. And just being poor. Not having the money to be like, hey, why am I sitting in class? I need to like go work. Wow. So then I work demolition like fucking 70 hours a week. Yeah.
Oh,
I left the last semester. Yeah.
Wow.
And midway through. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, you're a great guest. So let's just, let's wrap it up. And I hope that you can, I hope people will start, you know, going, you know, the five listeners that I have, you know, they look up your stuff and they say, oh, I like how she talks about stuff, like the human experience and how we can learn, like her pedagogical approach. And maybe, you know, we could get some more clowns taught by the virtuoso Natasha. All right. Looks for couples. Yeah, okay, gallery assistant, the vagueness of the gallery assistant and like the pulling back.
When you just let the audience member be like, that woman, Helen, didn't come in and think that she was going to be a part of the set in any way. And it kind of just speaks for itself. It's like so ridiculous. I don't know. For me, at least, it was hitting on this tone of like, yeah, sometimes we just do jobs. Like random ass shit that doesn't make sense to anyone else, but it's like, yeah, that's how I make my money. I'm an assistant to the gallery. Like, what?
Yeah, I think like as an audience we could sympathize, but it also like the way Nate drives like gender difference was by saying like, come on, like clearly tell me. Not in those words, but they're like clearly
interesting,
because
I was thinking of it, if I were the performer, I would be like, to sustain my set, I need more details than not. But, oh no, do you hear all this banging in the background? No? Okay, thank God.
No, but kudos, kudos to them for an afternoon.
No, they're taking out the carpet or something. But Yeah, I was thinking, like, as the performer, I need more details than not so I can, like, reference it later in my set to hopefully make it funny again. So I saw it as a very, like, practical move. Like, no, let me get the details of what it is. And the fact that this woman, like, stayed very strong to her, I'm just assistant to the gallery, was like, okay, I'm going to have to roll with that.
Oh, okay. I try to, you know, give my input as, like, a, I guess, masculine presenting guy who's, like, lived his life in that sort of way. And I'm going to be like, oh, yeah.
I love that. But, and it's, like, life seeing through the threads of, like, what this person could be in real life.
Yeah. Oh, the Gabali thing? Like, the very specific name for the gallery?
What about it? It's just so silly,
it's Dave. It's just very, tell me those details. Yeah. Uber, Lyft, mm-hmm. just like what you mentioned earlier, like the planning that's there in advance. I'd love to see what an option taking the bus, where that would be. Maybe on the back, who knows? So that was a good, funny, like little, like as you mentioned earlier, you want to be silly. You don't, you know, you're not really trying to trick the audience, right? So the audience immediately could understand, like, oh, if they had chosen Uber, mm-hmm. it would probably be on the other arm, sort of thing. And people like to feel clever, right? So I think that's added an effect to why they got such a good response. And I like the, can you go like this for me?
Oh my gosh.
Like, all this is set up to make Helen look like his Helen.
It's like the perfect, inevitable moment, right? Where we've been going on this journey and we like know Nate is totally faking it. And we're like wrapped up in these very direct, specific questions. Like, can you go like this for me? At least I wasn't expecting it. And then seeing it, I was like, yes. That, I think that's why the audience just goes crazy, because they're like, that's exactly what I wanted, or what we wanted to see.
Yeah, that's it. I know that I just on Instagram put a thing about, like, this is like a perfect joke, this other thing. But this is a perfect joke. It's because it works on, like, I don't know, I count three levels. I feel like, you know, you have the direct misogyny where it's like, yeah, my girlfriend wouldn't go down on me, all right? Then you have the I understand what this is leading up to, like the meta misogyny where you're like, oh, I understand this character is playing, right? And it's obviously a funny, mm-hmm. it's funny to think of this joke as funny. And then there's like the third, where I feel like I have like a third brain that's like, that has very, it's very, very malnutritious, whatever. Because I seldom get jokes that like this tier. Right? I sound like a complete asshole of a person. But then there's the third interpretation. I think that interpretation comes from like me as a someone who, mm-hmm. you know, is also a writer, artist, whatever. And it's like, yeah, this is a good joke.
Yeah. It's just so funny. It's so physical. It's so like connect. It's like, okay, again, you were saying earlier, like Natalie's eyes. I think that's a big thing in clowning, like where the audience actually gets to look at the audience, like really see the audience and actually make eye contact with people that are watching them. And Natalie, like, you full on is staring into this woman's eyes while, like, you know, doing a ghost blowjob, essentially. And I think that's also what makes it so, like, jarring and funny, because it looks so ridiculous.
And then I think we mentioned that we were going to go right up to that to discuss, but there's one joke that happens right after, or one thing that just made me really like laugh so much was when she asked, well, okay, whoa, you know, it's alluded to that's the same Helen. It's like, how come you've been like dating me or that guy, or like, you know, how does it feel that we've been our cocks have been going into the same pud for the last 7 months.
But I think those jokes afterwards only work because of all the groundwork that Natalie, the performer, had laid in actually making the audience love her and want to see what this Nate person does, even when they're at their worst.
Well, I thought the one thing I just wanted to mention was, like, in that after part is
yeah,
when he goes, "Well, do you love her?" Yeah. Right. And he has to respond authentically, or like,
oh my god. It's very fun. You should finish it. It's very funny. Yeah.
I will. Okay. Well, I
no.
Do you have any final thoughts? Okay. I think we've killed that frog.
Yeah, the frog is freaking dead.
Okay, so once again, I've been sharing this past close to 90 minutes with a very talented Natasha Machado, who ends up to be a very great conversationalist, and that's why I asked you to come on. You've been involved with the UCB for a long time. You have several, you have a good resume here. When can we catch you on the?
Oh my gosh, there isn't a date yet with that, but I'm really excited, and that was a really fun project to do. People in hazmats, you know, people doing comedy, yeah.
And your short film that you've been
It's actually part of an artist residency that I've been doing with a gallery in Athens, and they're debuting it in Munich, which, yeah, it has been amazing. It's been so much fun.
Yeah, that's what I always try to tell, you know, young artists. Get a residency. You know, it's as simple as that. Just get a residency, you know.
For my path as a comedian, like, no one encourages you to do that kind of stuff, and so it's been really fun to reconnect with visual artists who like talking about performance in this way, and I think has just like made the film that I made even deeper in a great way.
I would recommend the LA Performance Practice. Are you familiar with them? It's an art collective. I can get you. I don't know, after all, I'll get you in touch with them, and they put on good stuff. I have a friend of mine, Alexander Redacted, last name, who puts on a couple operas for them, and he does clowning. He did acting as Elvis, which is a performance that I'll try to find and link you to that I think you'll enjoy. And I was lucky enough to watch it live at the Automata Theater in Chinatown. Not to, you know, deflect.
No, that's amazing. I mean, I love seeing what people are doing. It just is so, I feel very proud of anyone doing anything on, especially in this time, in this quarantine time. I'm like, hell yeah, keep doing it.
Yeah. Would it be okay to plug where can our listeners find you or whatever?
Oh, yes. My website is my full name, natashamercado.com. And then my Instagram and whatever else is Champagne Tashi.
Awesome. But you're also saying NatashaMercado.net is still up for grabs.
Don't freaking take it, okay?